Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Green light 3-0 and she's gone!
Welcome to the 3-0 Show, part of the Athletic Baseball Show for Thursday, April 6th. Derek Van Riper, Britt Giroli here. Eno Saris out this week. He is enjoying some time in New York. Being a tourist in New York, which is probably even more fun if you've lived there. He lived there for a little while, so he's seeing the sights in a way in which I don't think he ever did when he lived there, Britt.
Yeah, from what I can tell on the internet, he is eating a lot of sandwiches and drinking a lot of beer. So, in other words, for Eno, it's a random Wednesday.
Yeah, he's just doing that in a different location. That's Eno being Eno, enjoying life to the fullest. So, on this episode, we are going to discuss the first week with these new rules in the books, a lot of observations. We're going to have some overreaction theater, which will include plenty of actual observations. The overreaction theater aspect of this sort of pokes fun at other baseball media outlets for their coverage, to be completely honest. So lots of stuff to get to today. Britt, you wrote about the new rules as a possible change in the legacy of the commissioner, Rob Manfred, who is not always a popular character on the episodes of the 3-0 show that we do. And this sort of gives him a chance to rewrite his legacy at the very least, right? Instead of being a commissioner of labor strife and contracting the minor leagues and negative things that he's done during his tenure, this could be a thing that brings people back into the game because we're seeing the positives already. Games are coming out 30 minutes shorter on average. Offense is up, right? Slash lines are up. Stolen bases are way up, and stolen bases are exciting. This is all very good from the outside looking in. I had not thought about it from the Manfred perspective. And then I thought, after Theo Epstein was on the show earlier this week, that maybe Theo's going to end up getting all the credit for this. And Manfred's still going to be the Manfred that we've thought he was to this point. And this is going to be the beginning of Theo's era controlling the game and shaping the future of baseball.
Yeah, I thought about that too. And by the way, writing something nice about Rob Manfred went over in certain corners about as well as you would expect. I had people demanding to know how much I was paid by MLB to write the article, which, you know, I would think at The Athletic, we've been critical enough that people would realize that no one was paying me to write the article. It came up in a conversation, as I mentioned, with someone in baseball, and we kind of laughed about it. But the more I thought about it, the more it's actually true. I think in 10, 20 years, we're going to look at Rob Manfred's legacy, and this might be the best thing he does, because I think we can all agree that the rule changes have gone much better than anybody could have anticipated. They've been received really well. I think the league's biggest fear was on opening day, having like three or four games decided on a pitch clock violation, and that didn't happen. And so I think what you're seeing is, you know, some grousing still, and there's still going to be some of that, I think, for a while. By and large, people like these rules. So, you know, I feel like it's so easy to be negative and make fun of the league or the commissioner and question why they do things. And this was a really positive thing. And as for Theo, obviously he had a huge hand in this. However, an important point, in 2015, Rob Manfred, when he took over, okayed the pitch clock for use of the Arizona Fall League. 2015, so well before Theo joined, and certainly not just Theo, but Morgan Sword is another guy who I feel like didn't get enough credit for how this is. This is obviously a huge undertaking. A lot of people are responsible for it. But this is something that the league has had as far back as 2015 in their minds. It just took them this long to implement it. They didn't want to kind of strong arm the players union, even though technically they could have added it. Manfred had a unilateral ability to do that with 1 year heads up in the previous labor agreement. Now, it's only 45 days in the new labor agreement, but they've kind of softened it by creating that joint executive like competition committee where they have some players on the committee and they all kind of talk the changes through. They didn't want to just kind of like stronghold the players and make these changes. I think that's why it got slow played, and that's why it was in the minor leagues tested out for a while. You've got a lot of guys that are in baseball now. It's kind of funny, Derek. So all these minor league guys who are on their first opening day rosters are usually the ones asking veterans, like, what do I do? How do I approach this? Well, it's been the opposite this year. The veterans are like, hey, you played with these rules. What do I do? How do I approach this? So it's been kind of cool. You know, maybe actually now that I'm talking about it, I should have done a story on it. I should have talked to a bunch of rookies because, you know, it's interesting to get their perspective because to them, they're so comfortable with it. I mean, you see Anthony Volpe running all over the place. This is nothing new. It's a bigger stage, certainly. But these guys know what 15 seconds feels like. You know, they know what the base paths are like. They know how these new rules are going to kind of equate to the game. And so I think you may see like a lot of these younger guys have really strong years because of that.
Yeah, it could be faster adjustments for some players debuting in the big leagues for the first time here in 2023. I was wondering, too, after seeing some of the responses about the new rules, the pitch clock in particular. I know Ken Rosenthal wrote for The Athletic about tweaking the pitch clock during the playoffs, potentially. I saw a tweet, I think it was CJ Nikowski from MLB Network Radio, suggesting that maybe in the final inning of a close game, if it's within 3 runs, the ninth inning, maybe you get rid of the pitch clock in those situations. I think this is something we could see in the future. I don't think it's something we would necessarily see quickly implemented, even though a lot of this is more written in pencil than the typical policy because of the way the league has the ability to make those changes if it wants to. But I like that they're kind of collaborating on this, trying to get more feedback. My general takeaway is leave it alone for the first year. See what happens all the way through the playoffs. Don't mess with the rules ahead of the playoffs. Play with the same rules throughout this season. Don't do what you did a year ago with the sticky stuff crackdown in the middle of the season. I don't like tweaking things in the middle of the season. I do think we might reach a point when we're looking at these adjustments where we could maybe go one step further in certain instances. I don't think it would necessarily be the close game threshold. That might be like too granular, but maybe it is just the late innings. Maybe it's the seventh inning and later, or we find other little ways to make the most important parts of the game flow the way they've always been meant to flow. That being said, I like this a lot. And I think if we hadn't talked and written so much about it, I think if it had just been changed sort of behind the scenes, other than the awkwardness of the pitch clock violations themselves, when you can see something is clearly happening at the plate, I don't think most people would really even notice. They'd have that little voice in their head saying, oh, that game went by kind of quick. Oh, it seemed like those teams were running a lot. But they wouldn't have a reaction equal to the actual impact that we've seen so far. And all these things are good. The only thing I'm worried about, Britt, if we go through this season and pitching injuries go through the roof, we have to pull back a little bit. We have to reevaluate this because you can't create a set of rules that breaks pitchers faster than we were already breaking them in the previous setup.
Yeah. So I talked about this on the radio, actually, because I think that's one of the big potential cons to this is how do the players adapt? And I think that's something that we may even see guys attack the offseason a little bit differently because their job used to be take as long as you want, throw as hard as you can for about 75 pitches. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. These guys are conditioned now to go about 75 pitches, especially at the start of the season. And now you're living your life in these 15 second increments. And I was talking to a mental strength coach for a big league team yesterday. And he said, a lot of the big issues is getting these guys used to subconsciously, like knowing what 15 seconds feels like. So they don't feel rushed. So they don't kind of get out of whack and, you know, throw a pitch with a weird delivery or land awkwardly, or, you know what I mean? Like a lot of this is just getting used to that's it. This is my rhythm. This is my tempo. This is it. And it only takes 12 seconds every single time. And that might take longer than the 6 weeks of spring training. That may take months. Guys have been playing for years. Guys have been playing for decades and doing, you know, not having a clock on them. So I also am curious about this. And I think when Ito comes back from break, we're going to chat about it. The velocity thing. We've talked about this on the show before. You know, I lift weights, big power lifter. If I'm lifting my maximum squats, 270 pounds on the bar, I can do that one time. But then I need 5, 6, 7 minutes to recover, right? If I'm lifting 100 pounds, I can do that once, 15 seconds later, do it again. So now are these guys going to take a few miles per hour off on their fastballs because their body, their arms, they simply can't recover. They can't flush the lactic acid quick enough to continue to do that for 75 pitches. I'm curious if we're going to see a little bit of velocity drops on guys. And so, you know, the soft tissue injuries have been an issue even before this. We've been through the roof. It's been a historic issue. So my question is, do guys throw bullpens now differently? Do they try to, you know, get rid of the ball quickly? Do they try to mimic that as well? Are there ways to kind of condition yourself better for these 50, again, these, everything now is in these 15 second increments. I think the first team that figures out how to maximize that is going to have a massive advantage. I mean, this is now kind of an open season and we're seeing a lot of teams, I think, I don't know how many games you've seen and kind of noticed this, guys are getting rid of the ball really quickly. In lots of cases, it's not coming even close to the pitch clock. So are they rushing now? Do they feel rushed because it's in their head? Are we going to see guys regress a little bit more to like where they have it down, where every time with 3 seconds to go, they let go, right? Every time. I wonder if we're going to see a little bit more of that because a lot of these guys have tons of time on the clock. And I just don't know if they're still kind of feeling their way around things.
I was just wondering if I can look at a velo drop this time last year versus now and see. I'd still like to see a full month's worth because weather conditions this early in the season fluctuate a lot from place to place. We do see velo start to increase as the weather changes in every season. My first thought, though, is that I've been consuming an absurd amount of baseball thanks to having a new board basically keeping me trapped in the house, which is, you know, fine. It's all good. It's a good time of year between March Madness and the start of baseball season. There's been plenty to watch. So I've seen as much baseball in the first week of this season as I've seen in any year. And I watch a lot of baseball anyway. I haven't noticed a lot of guys pitching at velos lower than we're accustomed to. Like, I've got a pretty good eye for that just from all the fantasy stuff I do, staring at fan graphs, digging into this stuff all the time on Savant. It doesn't seem like we're seeing a lot of guys down one or two ticks so far. But the other question is, if you're going faster in each game, is it a progressive decline in velocity? Maybe you hold velocity now. Maybe you fatigue over the course of the season more quickly because the recovery from these outings becomes more challenging the further into the season you go. So perhaps velocity will be okay maybe through the first half or up and through the All-Star break or into August. And then we're going to see a dip in September or October potentially. Lots of ways this could still play out. So that's why it's like I'm excited and I'm optimistic and I'm definitely like two thumbs up on it so far, but we can't declare victory yet. We can't fly the W here and say they fixed it. It's just a big step in the right direction.
But one more point on the flip side. Yesterday I was talking to Brian Anderson, who used to pitch and is now at the Rays TV. He thinks it's going to have the opposite effect. And I was curious as to why. He said, think about it. Games are a half an hour shorter. Think of all the less time pitchers are now spending standing on their feet, which people don't realize you're using energy. Your body is using energy. It's August. It's like a million degrees, 1,000,000% humidity. Now you're not standing out there quite as long. That also has a factor. He thinks that guys may feel a little bit more refreshed once they get the hang of this tempo. Now, I don't know, but it was like the first person I've heard that has said, listen, games are shorter. Guys are going to have more time to less time on the field, more time to sit, relax, recover. All of that builds up. If games are a half an hour quicker a day, how about position players? How many games they play a week? 5, 6? You're not talking about hours less on the field?
Yeah, it's less wear and tear on everybody.
Yeah, does that add up? You know, if it's a doubleheader, now it's an hour less. Doubleheaders crush players.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, it's really interesting though, isn't it? Like, I didn't think about that at all. I don't know if there's going to be any, I don't know if that's going to be correct, but it was an interesting way to look at things from a guy who did play for a long time, that maybe this will actually help guys.
Right. We were not at some sort of efficiency point previously with the pace of play as it pertains to injuries. So perhaps we'll get closer there. Maybe we'll give up some velo and we'll reduce injuries. Maybe that'll be the trade-off. And I think people could live with that because reduced velo probably means even more balls in play, which with the new shift rules probably leads to a lot more offense. So it's going to be a series of adjustments beyond this season, I think, Britt, but we're headed in the right direction.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's time to overreact to some of the things that have been happening on the field. Because of the new schedule, you are getting a look at the Rays at Nationals Park. You see the Rays all the time as someone who covers the Orioles and has been around Baltimore in that area for more than a decade now. But the Rays, they're 5-0, and they look, in the early days of the season, like they've got a pretty strong case for being the best team in baseball, which is just a crazy thing that people would say on other shows, but we'd never say something like that on this show. The pitching, though, has really caught your eye, Britt. So what have you seen in the series so far between the Rays and the Nats?
Well, just efficiency, and I think people are going to point to the Rays' schedule, and rightfully so, right? They've played Detroit and the Nationals. And I think that they may be a team. Every team is going to benefit from the schedule, probably. But I think they may be a team in particular who benefits, because I can tell you, as someone who covered the Orioles for 8 years, having young pitchers, unproven guys, constantly go into Yankee Stadium and Fenway Park, I mean, those are just exhausting places to pitch. So I think that playing less divisional games is going to help Tampa Bay. But really, Derek, I haven't crunched the numbers based off last night, but going into yesterday, they had it was taking them 13.4 pitches to get through an inning, Rays starters. That's absurd. That's absurd. They attack the strike zone and they trust their stuff and they live in the zone. And, you know, I'm trying to get Kevin Cash to say yesterday what I think, which is this could be the best Tampa Bay Rays rotation ever. This is their 25th season in existence. The 2012 rotation, if you go back and look, was pretty good. You know, obviously 2008, the year I was actually in Tampa Bay, they had a good starting staff, but I feel like they always have a good starting staff, but especially when Tyler Glasnow comes back, if they're all healthy, which is a key issue here, because did you know that the Rays are one of the top five teams in terms of guys on the IL last year?
You know, it sounds right now that you say it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have snap guessed it. I'd always wondered how much the surface in Tampa Bay could contribute to something like that. I know Wander missed a lot of time. Part of that's their approach with pitching. I think they, as an organization, they have found that pitchers who've dealt with significant injuries tend to be undervalued in the trade market, and even as maybe potential like scrap heap type free agents, which I don't mean to dehumanize players quite that much, but that's what they do. They bring guys in who've had pretty bad injuries in the past, and usually past injury is a pretty good indicator of future injury. So I'm not stunned by it, but yeah, I think once Tyler Glasnow is back, you're right, they have that case. I think Tyler Glasnow and Shane McClanahan as a 1-2 are about as filthy as any combination you're going to see, especially in the American League, over the course of a playoff series. And they've got this guy, Jeffrey Springs, who's coming on really strong, had a big spring, got the great outing against the Tigers over the weekend, 12 strikeouts, one walk, I think it was six no-hit innings from him. He's interesting because he doesn't throw particularly hard, but the arsenal's deep. He locates everything really well, and kind of the typical unheralded Rays starter, similar to the mold of Zach Eflin in the sense that they gave Eflin that contract, everyone was surprised. They gave Jeffrey Springs an extension, which was pretty surprising, because before last year, when he broke into the Rays rotation, Springs was mostly a reliever between Boston and Texas, and he never really had anything working. He never looked like he was going to be an effective big league reliever, let alone a quality big league starter, which again points back to, you know, the Rays, the great work they do in scouting and coaching and development. Mm-hmm. And yes, the early schedule has obviously helped, and it was tongue-in-cheek to suggest they're the best team in baseball, but they are going to be a force to be reckoned with yet again. And they're doing it on the position player side, too.
Yeah, that's the crazy part.
Yeah, when Luke Raley comes out and has a two-homer game, you know everything's coming up Rays.
Yeah, he's been important for them, though. He's a guy to watch for them, I think. And you're right. I was, you know, watching the game last night, and it was like, oh, well, the Rays can't win them all. Then they storm back with a 5-run inning. Now, part of that is the Washington Nationals, who may be the worst team in baseball. They're definitely in that top three, I think. But this Rays lineup, we always keep saying, like, oh, they don't have the offense. They don't have the offense. They don't have the offense. And they didn't really make any big offensive acquisitions. But when you look at it, early on, again, this is a tiny, tiny sample size. They've been able to have a ton of offense. They've all their wins have come by four or more runs. I mean, there was a crazy stat today. I retweeted it. You have to go back to the 1800s to find another start like that, which, you know, when you're talking about stats that go back to a decade or, you know, back to the 1800s, then a century, I guess, then you are now, no, two centuries. 1800s.
Two.
Two centuries. Yeah, then you know you're doing something right. So they're going to be right there in the thick of it, which you can probably pencil them in every year. What's crazy, though, is apparently this bothered some people in Tampa. MLB.com did like a top 10 rotations, and they did like rankings of them, and they did it by tiers. The Rays were not in the top tier. How does that even happen?
Oh, I don't know. I guess you got to have, if you have too many tiers, you could bump someone down, right? If you had eight tiers instead of four or something, then some tier one teams end up being tier two teams. That's my best explanation.
I think they were six. I'd have a hard, you'd be hard pressed to find five rotations projected to be better than Tampa Bay.
Well, maybe it was engagement farming.
Maybe. But again, I think it's bulletin board material. You know, they're not a team that anyone really ever expects to do well. But I think a lot of people were slighted by that one in particular.
Yeah, and there's one player on the position player side that I'm pretty intrigued by, mostly because it looks like he's going to play close to every day. It's Jose Siri. And Siri was previously in the Astros organization. The Rays acquired him last season. He's got power. He's got speed. If you like StatCast, it's red ink up and down the page. He's tooled up for days. He's just the kind of player that hasn't been able to put those tools into a stat line that forces him into the lineup every day. But he's a good enough defender in center field where it looks like the Rays are really going to give him a lot of opportunities. And I'm just curious, given the success they had with Randy Arozarena a few years ago and other players over the years they've acquired and turned into significantly bigger contributors than they were when they brought them in, I wonder what they could do with Siri. If they can make him more patient at the plate, or maybe he's the kind of player that ends up being like Adelis Garcia in Texas, where sure, he's going to strike out 30% of the time, and he's only going to walk 5 or 6% of the time, but he's a great defender, and he hits the ball really hard when he hits it, and he runs well, and who cares? If he's a 250, 300, 480 hitter who could steal bases and play gold glove defense, that's still a good player, even though it's not the best slash line that you could project for a player.
Right, and they have their star, right? They have Wander Franco, so they don't need another star. That, to me, that line right there sounds like a Tampa Bay Rays player. Doesn't it? If you had, you didn't know what team we were talking about, and you just read off those stats, it sounds to me like, oh, that's a Tampa Bay player.
And we know Randy Arozarena shows up in big situations as well. And by the way, the April schedule is pretty nice for the Rays coming up.
Yeah.
They've got Oakland for a weekend series. They get them at home, and they do see Boston for four, the Jays for three. They go on the road to Cincinnati in the middle of April. So yeah, a couple of really easy series layups that they should make if they want to win the AL East, they want to get ahead of the Jays and the Yankees and be that team this year. These are the types of games that you should dominate, and they're doing what they need to do so far to put themselves in that position. How about another overreaction, Britt? The Mets can't score.
Yeah. Max Scherzer's washed up. There's another overreaction.
I'm not even going to entertain that one. We need 2 months that look like what we've seen so far before we can have a conversation about Max Scherzer being washed.
Correct. I do not think Max Scherzer is washed, and I'm certain that he was probably incredibly angry after that outing yesterday. Also, how about the Milwaukee Brewers offense? Vaunted offense.
Yeah, you brought him up, not me.
I mean, nobody thought they were going to be able to hit. Again, though, this is when the overreaction comes into play, because it's been four or five games for most of these teams, Not even a full week worth of games. I love opening day, Derek, but I also get frustrated because there's nothing to analyze yet. It's like, fast forward me to May so then I can have a chunk to look at and trends to look at and like guys that I can actually say you're playing well, not like, oh, you had a three-hit game and then nothing. I got nothing to do with that. You know, you know, you look at a guy like Scherzer and he's always struggled with the home run ball and he's always struggled early. If you look at Max Scherzer overall, he's a guy that very often gives up most, if not all, of his runs in the first inning. So when the Brewers put that pair up and they went up 2-0, I was kind of like, all right, you know, watching the game, yeah, this is going to be, you know, the Mets are going to come back. And I mean, to be fair, this is why that you can't really overreact. There was one inning, was it the fifth or sixth, where the Brewers made three terrific fielding plays. Yeah. And the Mets just went down 1-2-3.
Yep. Yeah, there was the, yeah, if you saw that inning.
What inning was that?
I think it was the fifth. Christian Yelich almost got hit in the face, yes, because he lost the ball, yes, on the ribbon board. And then there were two other really good catches. Bryce Turang having a rookie of the week sort of week here to begin the season. Former first round pick. It's not a surprise that he'd be maybe a good big leaguer. I think where people have been overcorrecting, he hit a grand slam in the Brewers home opener. He's not a power hitter. He's really more of like an 8-10 homer guy. Going to contribute a lot on the base paths. Going to be a good defender at second base. Probably can hit the ball all over the ballpark and be kind of a good average and OBP sort of guy. If you expect Bryce Turang to be a suitable replacement for Colton Wong, I think you've got expectations in the exact right place. If you think Bryce Turang is going to be a superstar because he had a great first week, you're probably going to be a little disappointed by what happens in the next 25 weeks. But my question for you, Britt, when you had a problem the previous season and it carries over into the first week, first couple of weeks, first month, I do think it draws a more fair level of criticism. Doesn't mean they won't change. They did make a few adjustments, of course, this offseason, and they have guys, Brett Beatty, Francisco Alvarez, who are going to contribute, I think, a significant number of plate appearances to the big league roster this year and make that lineup deeper and probably better. So when you look at this Mets club, are you still looking at them in the same lens offensively as we did a year ago, or do you believe they are improved and it's only a matter of time before they look like a run-producing unit that can at least be on the same level as the other top-end contenders?
So I have a really hard time evaluating offenses this early because when you come out of spring training, very well known, the pitchers are ahead of hitters. It's often cold in April. Guys are still kind of finding their rhythm. What concerns me more, so I think the Mets offense, Derek, like in 2-3 weeks, maybe we have this conversation. I have a better read on where they're at. What I'm most concerned about is Scherzer. Now, I was being wildly insane in the exaggeration, in the overreaction of he's all washed up. However, he's had two shaky starts. But you go back to that, and his last, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 starts, Derek, he has a 7.89 ERA. He's allowed 10 home runs in those four starts. This is dating back, of course, to last season. Before that, he gave up 11 homers in the previous 22 starts. So something is not really working for him. He didn't look good. Scherzer, obviously, opening day as well. He really needs to kind of figure it out because this is a Mets team missing Justin Verlander. So Carlos Carrasco had a weird velocity drop. Jose Quintana is going to be out for a little while. Like they need, to me, we can sit here and say, oh, we need more hit. Like the hitters need to get going. And they do. And I think that they will. But I'm most concerned about a rotation in which was headlined by these two stars. One is hurt and one is not pitching well. Twice.
Yeah.
That to me is a bigger problem.
It has to extend much longer, of course. That's the common theme of all these things we're talking about. Nothing we're bringing up today is the be-all, end-all of the situation. It's just fodder for a podcast and things that people are saying and thinking right now. It's trying to basically talk people back into a place of, hey, it's the first week of April. There's still some time. Let things play out. I saw some of those reactions on this news item. Eloy Jimenez down with a hamstring strain, probably a 2-3 week injury. It's the other hamstring, Britt. It's not the same as the one he hurt last year, but it's a hamstring nonetheless.
Those watching on YouTube, I'm just shaking my finger because to me, this isn't an overreaction. The guy can't stay healthy, and the White Sox in general, it must be the regular season. There's a prominent White Sox star on the IL. I mean, this team can't catch a break. Can they?
I think it's just random bad luck. I don't think it's an organizational deficiency yet. If all the same guys who were hurt last year are down with similar ailments again this year, we can circle back around on that. And I see the Twins, just staying in the same division for a moment, being careful with Byron Buxton in the early days of the season. He's been DHing a lot. I think he got a day off already. And I think that bothers some people, but trying to do it the way they've done it in the past, trying to push guys out there in a full capacity role when year over year over year, a combination of bad luck and injuries have cost them significant time, doing the same thing again seems like a mistake, right? If you have to give Byron Buxton every fifth day off to begin the season for the first 2 months, and then it becomes like every fourth day through the middle of the summer, he's still going to track to probably have a career high in plate appearances. His career high in plate appearances is 511. If the Twins get 511 plate appearances from Byron Buxton this year, they're going to be ecstatic. And I think there's some similarities, even though they're very different in terms of the skills they bring as players. I think the White Sox have a similar mindset with Eloy Jimenez, where it's sort of like, if it takes extra maintenance just to make sure that we can get him to 130, 135 games, fine. We'll take those sacrifices. We'll make those adjustments because we'd much rather get to that 500 plate appearance marker than fall short and get 300 because we aimed for 650. I think that's something that fans still have a hard time with that. They don't always wrap their minds around the load management aspects of any sport. This is you hear load management a lot around the NBA, but it's a thing in baseball. Guys get days off. There's a reason why you have extra players in your roster. It's because guys get hurt and because guys need rest. And we'll see how this plays out with the new rules, like we said earlier. But as frustrating as it is for Eloy Jimenez, this is a guy that's mostly a DH, who's had a lot of injuries, who's been a great hitter on a per plate appearance basis when he's been out there, has a lot of power. I think he's shown the ability to get on base even more than we had seen earlier in his career. I still have a really high ceiling for him. I think hopefully for his sake is just a small setback for what will be otherwise a full breakout season.
Yeah, I'm going to stay positive. I'll focus with you. Although, again, to me, it just reads very much like I've seen this movie before. but I will continue to be optimistic about this and not overreact. But if we're going to overreact, did you watch the Marlins game last night or did you blink and miss it? Because it was 1:57 game time.
It was very fast. Kenta Maeda pitched well. Sandy Alcantara pitched well.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. That guy looks like a Cy Young candidate again. Mm-hmm. Again, early overreaction. But that game, this is what's tough about this time of year is I'm trying to get my bearings to all these different teams. So I'm just like flipping back and forth. I put the Mets game on when it saw it 2-0 and then was like, go to the Brewers game, go to the Orioles game in Texas. We're going to get to the Orioles, by the way. They've been a little bit of a story. But you look at Miami, and if they pitch like that, they can hang with anyone.
Yeah, they can, but they also, like the Mets, are having a similar problem what they had last season. Right now, the Marlins have scored 10 runs this season. 10.
Yeah.
I know it's only been a week, but you have to be nervous. Yeah. They've struck out in 31.7% of their plate appearances.
Whew.
Yeah, so they're pretty bad offensively. And when you look at what they did over the course of the winter, it's hard to see them being a lot better. They didn't necessarily get a big impact player to turn this around or to help turn this around. So I'm worried that they're going to be very similar to last year. Great pitching, maybe solid defense. I just don't know where the extra offensive production is going to come from for the Marlins this year.
Right. So what you're saying is they have to win games 1-0 like they did Tuesday.
That is a very tough road to go down. And yeah.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But back to their starting pitching, back to their starting pitcher. I mean, this guy doesn't get enough credit because he's in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
I was going back and forth. I was trying to catch the when he pitched. I was trying to catch that, but you know, it's impossible. I need the multiple screen setup this year. I think it's just too tough. They're all on commercials on the same time. It feels like, I don't know what you got going, but I can't just watch on one TV this year. I think I need the dual.
Yeah. So you got a couple options, right? So this is a good question to put out there. How do you watch multiple games at the same time? You have the options now because you get the big inning.
You do.
Big inning is out there. Not big inning, but big inning. And that jumps around, does the channel changing for you. There are some nights MLB Network has their desk people jumping around, flying around from game to game. That can be pretty good if you don't really have any one particular game you want. If you have MLB TV on your laptop and you use technology to put that onto your TV, then you can do multi-view games really easily. That's the best choice if you got the tech ability to do it. Yes, I think big enough TV, get four games going at once, easy to change them as they end. No problem there. Easy to change just to which sound you're getting if commercials come on. Very, very convenient.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
How has your viewing priority changed with the Orioles especially? How far up in the watchability ratings have they come just in the past year? I mean, they got Grayson Rodriguez coming up and debuting. We're recording this just before that debut. We're going to stop so we can go watch it. So Grayson Rodriguez is up. And of course, Gunnar Henderson was up last year. Adley Rutschman was up last year. They had a pretty fun opening series with the Red Sox. Grayson Rodriguez is sort of the beginning of some young pitching. DL Hall should be up again later this year to contribute, hopefully in the rotation. My only issue with the Orioles is that their pitching generally isn't great. So if you love pitching, they're not necessarily a team you're seeking out. But if you want to watch exciting young players, I think the Orioles are creeping closer to that top 10 of games or teams that you're prioritizing on a day-to-day basis if you're just kind of just casually jumping around.
Yeah, listen, because I live in this area, if they're watchable, I'm going to watch them. I like knowing what's going on with them. It's tough, though. Like, as a national writer, there's so many games, it's overwhelming, you know, when you're trying to figure out who to watch all the time. I will say that I often go by who's starting for teams. But obviously, with the Orioles, I'm going to be at opening day tomorrow. They play the Yankees for their home opener. So I have been paying a little extra attention to what's going on there. I also, what I do a lot of times in the morning, and I don't know if this interests people, but people may be rushed in the morning, have actual jobs, they have to go to work in the morning. I watch the condensed games on MLB TV because they give you more than the highlights, but not nearly as long. They're like 5 minutes, not nearly as long as an actual game. And then you can really catch up. Like, I was watching the Seattle Angels condensed game this morning. God, Seattle, let's talk about fun young teams. Seattle's got to be up there as well. I mean, first off, they absolutely obliterated the Angels in the game last night. But also, because of where I live on the East Coast, I often can't stay up and watch those teams. I think Seattle is such a fun team. The Orioles are certainly fun. To me, the big question around the Orioles is, like, when are they going to supplement these young guys with free agents and really contend, right? Are they better than Toronto? Are they better than Tampa? Are they better than the Yankees? On paper, no. You know, the Red Sox are a mess, and I wish more people were upset about that, because it seems like everyone's just okay with the Red Sox being okay. And like 10 years ago, that would never have happened, right? I don't see any outrage for the Red Sox, who are just like thrilled to be 500 if they get there. And I don't really know why that is.
I think it's localized outrage. I think fans are furious in Boston. I think the rest of
us
are.
Though. It's not. I talked to someone at the Globe yesterday, and he's like, whatever. People don't care.
Look, the Bruins are really good right now. Maybe that's taking some of the heat off the Red Sox.
Maybe. But like, isn't it just weird in baseball when the Red Sox aren't good?
For the earlier part of my fanhood, I wanted them to break their curse. And, you know, I was kind of like pro Red Sox, like getting it done in a way that was exciting, right? The first time they won was 2004 now. I was excited about that. When they broke the curse, the Bambino, right? Now I've got so much Boston fatigue, I don't care if they're bad. Like I really don't. Like I've seen their best players in the key spots. Right, I don't have a Mike Trout complex about Rafael Devers. We've seen Rafael Devers play in the postseason, and we've seen him win in the postseason. So I have no one on that roster I feel bad about or feel bad for. I've seen that team win enough. Like they can go away for 10 years and come back, and then we can have another conversation about the Red Sox being bad for too long. But if they're down for a year or two, no sympathy for me. Sorry.
A year or two? I feel like there are certain teams that should just always be going for it, and the Red Sox should be one of them.
No, they are, but they're just not doing a great job of going for it. They're trying, but their try is not good enough.
Are they really trying, though?
Yeah.
Well, like, when was the last, all they did was make, like, when was the last trade that went their way?
That's what I'm saying. They tried and they failed. They did some dumb stuff.
Over and over and over again.
They don't deserve to contend, Britt. They made stupid decisions and they're paying the consequences for it. They deserve this. They deserve every bit of this mediocrity they're going through right now.
But what happened to the Red Sox team that would just buy free agents all the time? They're just not there. I wonder if John Henry is just, who owns a million other things and teams, is just like, since when are the purse strings this tight in Boston, right?
Yeah, it's true.
It's odd. It's very odd. Like, the Cubs were like that for a while, but the Cubs spent money, like what, like $250 million or something this winter, around there. So I don't know how we got on this topic, but it was something that's been really bothering me. It's like, why don't more people care that Boston's not really trying to be good?
I think it just happens, though, where you've got, let's say you've got six big, big market teams. They're not all always good at the same time. Between like the Yankees, the Mets, the Dodgers, the Angels, theoretically, should count as part of this. The Cubs, the Red Sox.
Yeah.
The White Sox always get a pass on this. Historically, they have anyway. And the Angels have historically got a pass on this for being a big market team.
The Dodgers. Just imagine if the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Mets were just like marred in mediocrity and not even spending. It happens you spend and you're not good, but it doesn't often happen that these teams don't try for a prolonged period.
Yeah, they're like, they're just 1 foot in. They deserve this right now. And that's the problem. You can't be 1 foot in. So, I don't know. I feel absolutely no sympathy for the Red Sox. I never will. By the way, what are your expectations for Grayson Rodriguez? This is going to air after he pitches.
I know.
It's 1:53 Eastern as I'm asking this question. So it's just before his big league debut. How many innings?
Texas's lineup?
Yep.
Four.
Four innings.
Five.
Okay. So five if things are going on. How many strikeouts?
Six.
Six Ks. Walks?
Three.
Runs?
Well, I don't think he goes that deep. So I think four runs, three earned.
Ooh.
Yeah, listen, I think he's going to be very good, but I also think this is so tricky because it's whatever I say is going to be absolutely wrong by the time this runs. Mike Elias said in spring training he's not ready yet. I did not see the Orioles in spring training, but I've talked to multiple people who were there who agreed with the decision, who said he didn't look ready. They're calling him up now because of Kyle Bradish's injury and because it's his turn in the minor leagues. This isn't a promotion of the top prospect because he's been dominating at AAA. So I think he's going to be good. I think he's going to be a huge part of their future. But anyone who expects him to go out and throw like eight scoreless up on a very good Texas lineup, again, maybe I look like an idiot when this airs. What do you think?
I think it's a reasonable line for expectations. Could be strikeouts, you know, with some hard contact, with some mistakes. I think it's interesting because if he pitches well, he probably gets another turn. If he struggles, they will find someone else to make that start. They'll use someone out of the bullpen who's a little more stretched out. They'll find some other workaround. And the schedule as far as when they need a fifth starter next could be a factor in all that too. But if he pitches well, they have to change their tune a little bit, right? I think they have to keep him up until he gives them a reason to send him back down. If he pitches well in this debut. It just seems like it's on a start-by-start basis right now because of what they said in spring training. Because you're right, he didn't get a chance to even prove them wrong in AAA yet.
Yeah.
Really, it's been
right.
It's been a week.
What is good enough though to stay around?
I would say four plus innings of two runs or less would be fine, because that's sort of the baseline what you can get when you take someone out of your pen. Like if you throw Austin Voth and stretch him out for 50-60 pitches. That's sort of like the best case scenario that you could realistically hope for from players like that. So if Rodriguez comes in and does something like that, that's good enough to go again. And I hope they're still looking at him in the correct long-term lens. I really do, because as you said, he's a huge part of their future and he's been frequently discussed because his omission from the opening day roster was very, very surprising. Got one last story on the way out the door, Britt. I saw this one on The Athletic from Brendan Cutie. The Yankees are having trouble with uniform numbers because they've retired too many of them, and they're considering having the coaching staff no longer wear numbers on their uniform. It's the thing that it may petition the league to eventually do this. And it got me going down the rabbit hole of how ridiculous I think the tradition of managers wearing a player's uniform really is. It goes back to the player manager era forever ago, so I understand why they have it. But when you see managers now, it's usually, almost certainly, a hooded sweatshirt over the jersey anyway, if they're even wearing the jersey underneath. Who knows? Let's get to the bottom of that story. How many managers aren't even wearing the uniform anymore? That's too many layers. You want something breathable. You want the breathable three-quarter sleeve sweatshirt that has no other function in society other than for being a baseball manager. That is a shirt designed for one specific job. But if you're going to wear that anyway, it doesn't matter if you have a number on your jersey or not. So I think the Yankees, their first world problems are actually leading us to a change that is long overdue. Let's stop forcing managers to wear the actual player's uniform. You want to wear one? Fine. Wear whatever you want. But they don't usually wear it anyway.
Yeah. And the coaches, too. Is there a need for this? Do they need? And again, they could also have blank jerseys. Do they need numbers? Why do they need?
It would look weird with no number on it, though, right?
Yeah.
You're so because used to seeing a number on it. Yeah. It'd be so jarring. Oh, they did slap an ad on there or something. Oh, no, don't give them a blank. Don't give them a blank canvas to put stuff on.
Or do they just have like what the manager's wearing? Why can't they just wear that?
Yeah. Whatever comfortable long sleeve sweatshirt, whatever. Just wear that.
I mean, I covered Buck obviously forever. And he used to say like in no other sport, like imagine if in football you go to the sidelines and the guy's got full pad, like, you know what I mean? Bill Belichick's wearing full Patriots gear. Like, come on.
Even just a
and
jersey.
In hockey, they wear suits. They get all dressed up in hockey. Not that they should wear suits for baseball, because obviously with the dirt, let me just tell you, I've ruined tons of shoes myself. But, you know, it's just a weird, because it's the only sport where they do that.
Yeah.
Imagine Tom Izzo wearing a pair of basketball shorts.
I don't want to imagine that. I don't want to picture that. I don't want to picture basketball coaches wearing basketball uniforms. It's not palatable. So I would pass on that.
Great story though. He's doing a great job. If you're a Yankees fan, you really should be checking out. We have two new beat writers this year, and I've really enjoyed all the stuff that they've been putting out there.
Yeah, a lot of great stories out, and we got a new newsletter. Levi Weaver, Ken Rosenthal are putting that out each and every day, so you can grab that from The Athletic. It's free. You'll see it out there. It's on the header right now. So sign up for that. Have it delivered right to your inbox each and every day. If you'd like a subscription to The Athletic, it's $1 a month for the first year. You can't really beat that price. So theathletic.com/baseball show will bring you to that offer. You can find Britt on Twitter @Britt_Giroli. You can find me @Derek Van Riper. We are off to go watch Grayson Rodriguez. The Athletic Baseball Show returns on Friday.
With the 3-0 show, you always have the green light. I stole Eno's line.
Green light 3-0, and she's got.